So welcome, everyone. Thank you for coming here on this beautiful morning. Beautiful winter morning in Tampa. Before we get into the talk, the Dharma talk, usually often we take questions and answers discussion as part of the talk, but we won't have time this morning. But for those of you who are new, please be aware that there are various kinds of introductory events, as well as I think an upcoming Awakening to Life class, which really deals with all the basics of mindful living. So for those of you who are new, those opportunities are available. Before we want to begin, some of you who don't come regularly may have noticed that there are some people wearing brown jackets this morning. Of course, if you kept your eyes down, you wouldn't have noticed that. But, but for those who've been peeking a little bit, so let me just say quickly, the people, and not everyone, who are wearing brown jackets, there is within the Thich Nhat Hanh tradition, and I think most of you know, we are very closely aligned with the spirit teachings and practices of Thich Nhat Hanh and his community. Many years ago, he founded a kind of new kind of order, O-R-D-E-R, within the Buddhist tradition, that has been translated into English as the Order of Interbeing. It is unusual in two ways. Traditionally, in traditional Buddhism, Asian Buddhism, lay people sort of have their community with their five precepts, and then in Buddhism there are monastics and nuns, and they have several hundred, close to 300 precepts that they have to live by. And what Thich Nhat Hanh did, he founded this new order called the Order of Interbeing, that was open to both lay people and monastics in absolute equality. So that was one unusual part of the order. The other thing was that he really wanted it to be an expression of modern Buddhism. So the trainings or the precepts of the order, there are 14, are really a very wonderful modern updates of traditional Buddhist teaching, ethics and whatever, in terms of how to apply it in the modern world. For those of you who are more interested, there is this book called Interbeing, which has the trainings, the precepts of the order, the charter of the order, but also Thich Nhat Hanh's commentary on them. So it's called Interbeing. So in our community, the Florida Community of Mindfulness, we have a very active order. I think we have close to 30 persons, members who are either ordained or aspirants, and everyone who has been ordained has been ordained by Thich Nhat Hanh. When he comes every 2 years to this country, usually at all his retreats, there is these order of interbeing. Why don't we have people just stand up for a moment, then I'll get on, just so you can see them. So these are ordained members, and then, and again, probably for this weekend, we had this Order of Interbeing retreat here, and maybe two-thirds of our members were here. I am not introducing you to the elite. Oh, there are some up in the balcony. I am not introducing you to our elite. I am letting you know who is here to serve you, to take care of you. So it doesn't mean that we don't have many wonderful people in our community who aren't in the order, who serve in many capacities, but these are the people who have gone through actually a period of aspirancy, several years of training, mentorship, that has led to their final ordination by Thich Nhat Hanh. And then we have a number of people who are aspirants, currently aspirants. Maybe they can stand up. These are the people I want you to keep your eye on, because they aspire to be part of the order of interbeing, and we need the eyes of the Sangha to watch them carefully. So these are our aspirants. So thank you. So again, for those of you who are interested, this book, Order of Interbeing. So because we had the order members here this weekend for a retreat that happens once a year, so there were talks and different kinds of things, I thought I would kind of continue on from what we did this weekend to just share some things with you. One would be one of the 14 trainings that I think is very meaningful to all of us. But first I wanted to, you know, in the past, there is this wonderful, very traditional Buddhist text called The Way of the Bodhisattva. It's not necessarily light reading, but it's really a wonderful reading. Santideva was really one of the lights of Indian Buddhism in the 8th century. He wrote in verse this book called The Way of the Bodhisattva. In Mahayana Buddhism, the Bodhisattva is this kind of ideal for practitioners, because a Bodhisattva is somebody who has united in their life two fundamental concerns of somebody undertaking a spiritual life. One is they are totally dedicated to their own enlightenment, their own awakening, their own healing, personal healing and transformation, but they're equally and concurrently dedicated to benefiting others, helping others. So they unite those two strands in good religion and good spirituality, which is personal transformation that is not isolated, but that takes place within the context of the transformation of the whole society. So this book is called The Way of the Bodhisattva, and really in verse, very profoundly but very heartfully, lays out the whole path of the Bodhisattva. And in the Florida Community of Mindfulness, we have had what we call intensives, several of them over the years, for 6 months at a time, where we have studied this text deeply. And there are many verses. So yesterday, when I was talking to the OI members, I shared within this one verse that I felt was a good guideline, but I think it's a good guideline for all of us, so I wanted to share it with you. And this is from the chapter called Vigilant Introspection, and it's a four-line verse. So let me read it, and then we can comment on it. So Santideva wrote, with perfect and unyielding confidence, with steadfastness, respect, and courtesy, with conscientiousness and awe, work calmly for the happiness of others. It's really, I think, quite beautiful. There may be many people here saying to themselves, at this stage of my life, I am just working just for a little happiness for myself. And for many people, that's where we start. There's nothing wrong with that. But what the Bodhisattva path would say to you is, even if we are still very much unable to really sustain and nurture an ongoing happiness within myself, my object in doing that is not just for myself. Right? I want to be able to bring happiness to others. And part of being able to bring happiness to others, to bring benefit to others, means that we know how to do it for ourselves. This is very important. It is in this Bodhisattva tradition to learn, to develop the capacity to really benefit others, to help free people from their suffering, to really teach people how to sustain well-being and happiness in their life, is not something we go to school for. It's not a technique that we learn. It is something that we practice and we realize in our own life. And when we have realized it in our own life, we know it from the inside, right? When you have really dealt with your own suffering and your own afflictions and your own mind as it is, and have really learned how to transform it into something that is a vehicle for happiness and joy and well-being and compassion, et cetera, all the good things, then you will know. You will have the capacity of sharing that with others, even if you've never read the book, even if you never got the degree. So in this Bodhisattva path, even if now you say, you know, happiness of others, I'm struggling, you know, to get myself out of the hole I'm in. That's fine, because even now you can generate that wish, right? That one day you will bring benefit to others. And also, as you are working your own path here, you can have at the same time an understanding that I'm doing this not just for myself. I'm doing this for others. So in that sense, to walk the Bodhisattva path, you don't have to see yourself as a highly developed person. You know, you can be the complete mess you are currently. You know, it's like saying, you know, I'm cleaning up my house, not only for myself, but I want people who come to my house to also be able to enjoy it, right? So it's sort of like that. I'm cleaning up my own mess, so others can enjoy it. So he says, with perfect and unyielding confidence or trust. I think we would need to ask ourselves, well, what am I supposed to have confidence or trust in, right? In this path, there are two things we need to trust. It's interesting, Buddhism places a lot of emphasis on the ability to question. It is not a path of dogma. It's really a path of asking questions, asking good questions. But there are two things that at a certain point one needs to give up doubt or questioning about. The first is one's own capacity to awaken. One's own capacity to be enlightened, which are kind of big words, but really means one's own capacity, that one has the capacity to free oneself from all these sufferings and delusions and emotional afflictions and bad habits. that we all have that capacity. And that all a Buddha or a Bodhisattva or a master is just somebody who's done it. They're just like us, they're no different than us, they're human beings just like us. The only difference is they've done it. Okay? So the first thing we have to have confidence in is that each of us, no matter where we are, no matter how much of a mess we are, we understand that we all have this capacity to be free. This is inherent. Okay, so that's one thing we have to get and have trust and confidence in. The second thing we have to have confidence in or trust is the path. Right? In other words, I can believe, oh yes, there must be a way to get to Miami. But I have to trust, you know, that 75 will take me there. Right? Because when I trust that 75 will take me there, all I need to do is what? Get on 75 and go. It's simple after that, right? I don't have to keep asking, you know, am I going the right direction? Is this the right way? Is the person who told me the right way really somebody I can trust? Maybe there's a better way. I pick up the map. There are lots of other roads. How do I know that they're not better ways or getting there? All that stuff. I mean, and that's really the way many people do their transformation. And they wonder why they never get to Miami. So, again, Buddhism is funny, as I say, because on one hand, it encourages questioning. So it would probably encourage us to read guidebooks, check the map. But once you've decided, once you're clear that this is a good road and it takes you where you want to go, you have to trust it. You have to have confidence in it, right? So when your own habit energy of doubting and laziness and procrastination and always being distracted, wow, that looks like an interesting exit. Port Charlotte, I wonder what's down there, Highway 70, I wonder where that goes, And, again, it doesn't mean one may not, at the end of that, have done a lot of exploration of Florida and seen parts of Florida that many people don't see, right? I'm not saying that that may not occur. But I'm also saying if Miami is where you want to get to, why not just get on 75 and go there? Okay. So with perfect and unyielding confidence, with steadfastness, respect, and courtesy. So again, I think we are being reminded that steadfastness means what? We have to be consistent, right? And again, he's getting at where many of us are. We are not steadfast, are we? Many of us, we have lots of things going on in our life. Lots of interests and lots of this. And so it's almost happenstance that sometimes we'll put our energy here and then, things will change. We'll put our energy over here and then we'll think, I should have put my energy back there. So maybe I'll put my energy back there for a while. Things aren't quite going right. So I'll put my energy back there. Then things go a little better there. So then something, right? Again, we are not steadfast. We are not consistent. Respect and courtesy, I think, are quite wonderful because they just tell us how we should be with one another. Right. In Buddhism, it is said, every human being intrinsically is a Buddha. Every human being has, no matter how far they have wandered, from their true self. Every human being has within them, because of their intrinsic nature, has the capacity for freedom, for goodness. Every human being. So that not only means ourself, and we should definitely be courteous and respectful to ourself. Many people, maybe even people sitting here, are not courteous and respectful to themselves. The way they talk to themselves in the privacy of their own minds, the way they treat their bodies. We often don't treat our bodies with respect and courtesy. But also we should treat everyone we meet. And that means everyone. From the highest to the lowest, to those we approve of, to those we may deeply disapprove of. All human beings are worthy of courtesy and respect. Because they are human beings and because they have that potential in them I said, when I was talking to the OR yesterday, I said, you know, and this applies to us. I mean, many of us, if you had run into us years ago, we might have been complete jerks. Many people laughed as if they acknowledged that. Actually, I think I use a stronger word than jerks. And it shows us, because for many of us who are now, maybe have changed our lives, turned our lives around, there may be been a time in our life when we maybe had not acted in ways that appeared worthy of the respect or courtesy of others. And yet, even in those days, if we had met somebody who had treated us that way, that could have been very meaningful to us. So it is important that we offer, at the very least, respect and courtesy to everyone we encounter. With perfect and yielding faith, with steadfastness, respect, courtesy, with conscientiousness and awe. Again, conscientiousness, I think, is referring to that the way we proceed in our quote-unquote spiritual life, our dharma life, our life of what Thich Nhat Hanh calls healing and transformation. Conscientiousness means we are scrupulous in our attention to it. Scrupulous means from morning till night, when we are alone or when we are with others, whether we are at home, whether we are at work, whether we're shopping, whether we're out enjoying ourselves at some kind of activity, we are not forgetting, we are conscientious. In working our path, in working our dharma, right? That there's a consistency. We're not pretend Buddhists. You know, there are many people who are pretend Buddhists. We get into the public arena, we really try to look very good, right? But left to on our own, behind closed doors, God knows what we're up to, right? Where many of us are that way, outwardly we're one way, but yet in our minds we're very much another way. Conscientiousness means we are trying to end that charade. And we want to be authentic in our desire for transformation, for change. And so we are really doing our best to be consistent. When we're alone, when we're with others, when we're in the Dharma hall, when we're out in the bar or whatever, wherever you may find yourself, that the way we are and the way we treat people, we are conscientious about our transformation. And then I like this word awe. But you know, again, these are texts that are translated. So what the original, I'm not sure if Shantideva wrote in Sanskrit or a different Indian language, but whatever, and I think this was actually translated from the Tibetan. So again, when you go through, as anybody knows, when you translate, the translator has to choose a word, because these languages are not like one-to-one, and there may be many shades of meaning in the original word that may not be exactly found in English, so they have to play around. So I'd be interested to know what the original word is that they're calling awe. But what I like, but I guess the way I would interpret with conscientious and awe, I mean, you know, when we think something is awesome, or when we look at something with awe, we are what? We think it's what? We're pretty impressed. It's pretty dark. That's pretty awesome. or if we're you know, that's really something. Wow, right? It's kind of a wow thing. I like that. In Buddhism, especially in Zen, there is this phrase, a beginner's mind. Maybe some of you have heard that. It's often said that this is the mind of the practitioner. Many people think, oh, the more I practice, I should have a more older mind. But beginner's mind is greatly prized because a beginner is what? Fresh. You know, when you're a beginner at something, you may not have a lot of expertise and competency. You may lack that when you're a beginner. But you usually have a lot of enthusiasm. Right? Beginners have a lot of enthusiasm. It's all kind of new and fresh and exciting. And can people can people remember when they were a beginner at something? People often feel that when they begin a new relationship or begin a new job, right? Full of expectation. This is good. It's great. I'm really excited. So that kind of freshness, that kind of awe, is something he's recommending that we never lose. Right? It's like we never lose the love. Right? It's like that. That our walking of the path, our work, our walking of this spiritual journey of healing and transformation, you know, we're excited about. You know, this is wonderful. Right? To have, you know, to have found a path in this life that leads to healing and transformation, to awakening, that I'm following a path that has the capacity not only to heal me of all my woundings, to rid me of all my emotional afflictions, but most importantly, really facilitate the awakening in me of all the positive qualities of heart and mind. You know, this is wonderful. You know, and so he is recommending, he's encouraging us to maintain that. And you maintain that by reflecting on it. If you feel it slipping, you need to reflect on it, right? How fortunate I am. You know, if you're kind of not happy with your job, right? Sometimes just to reflect, well, at least it's wonderful I have a job. Right? Many people don't have a job. So even that can kind of restore some sense of happiness about what we're doing. In the same way in our relationships with people, how often we have to reflect and remind ourselves of the good qualities and all the good things in it to kind of refresh the relationship, right? We always want to keep that relationship fresh. Is that clear? So we want to keep our spiritual practice fresh, so reflecting in this way. So he says again, with perfect and unyielding trust or confidence, with steadfastness, respect and courtesy, with conscientiousness and awe, and then what to do? Work calmly for the happiness of others. And again, as I said earlier, working calmly for your own happiness in this way is working for the happiness of others. But it's good to remember that we're not alone, and that our happiness in life is also related a lot to what's going on around us and the people around us and how we're relating to them and how they're relating to us. So the idea of happiness, personal happiness, also has a larger dimension. And certainly we know that just from anecdotal observation, it does appear that people who are very open-hearted, that people who generally care about other people and are actively involved from that good-heartedness, helping other people, tend to be what? Happy people. Have you noticed that? Yes. On the other hand, people who are always self-concerned, self-absorbed, only thinking about themselves, often tend not to be really happy people. Have you noticed that?
Yes.
All right. So what he's saying here, it's good for us to remember that. Work calmly. In other words, what I said to people in the OI yesterday, the Order of Interbeing yesterday, I said, please see yourself as a marathon runner, not a sprinter. Right? If you're a sprinter, you can only go short distances. Right? And then you get very tired. Many people approach their helping of others in short sprints, and then they get winded. They have to stop. But if you're really in this for the long haul, you want to kind of pace yourself. So he says, work calmly, steadfastly, conscientiously, for the happiness of others. So I wanted to share that with you this morning from the Way of the Bodhisattva, and then I wanted to just look at one of the these 14 trainings. Again, they're very wonderful. They're all very different and look at different aspects of life. This is the seventh mindfulness training of the Order of Interbeing. And let me read it to you, and then we can talk about it. It is said, aware that life is available only in the present moment, and that it is possible to live happily in the here and now, we are committed to training ourselves to live deeply each moment of daily life. We will try not to lose ourselves in dispersion, or be carried away by regrets about the past, worries about the future, or craving, anger, or jealousy in the present. We will practice mindful breathing to come back to what is happening in the present moment. We are determined to learn the art of mindful living by touching the wondrous, refreshing, and healing elements that are inside and around us, and by nourishing seeds of joy, peace, love, and understanding in ourselves, thus facilitating the work of transformation and healing in our consciousness. So that's a paragraph that has a lot. that has a lot in it. Again, these 14 trainings, when someone is ordained in the order, they formally receive them. And then part of being an order member is that you recite them. And in the training of someone in the Order of Interbeing, they are asked to study each of the trainings, but then they work very closely with their mentor to make sure not only they understand them intellectually, but they know how to live them and have brought them into their life. Aware that life is available only in the present moment and that it is possible to live happily in the here and now. This is big, right? I mean, this is very big. You know, the problem with reading is that we can keep going, can't we? I mean, I can just, and then I can go on the eighth one, you know, and then I can go on the ninth one, you know, and I can go on like this for hours. Zero penetration. Zero penetration, zero effect, zero change. Right? Is that clear? So when we are, these are words that are being, that were spoken or written to help us transform, right? So we have to stop. and go, what's he saying here and what does this mean? Aware that life is available only in the present moment. I mean, the first thing I'd say is, how many people believe that? So you have to, it's easy to say it. But it is a profound life changer. Because most people believe, right, that life is available in the past and the future. And that's the truth. That's where 90% or 95% of the people are. Because where are their minds? They're always thinking about the past, ruminating about the past, right? Going over the past, even the stuff that happened this morning or happened yesterday. They're constantly ruminating about, thinking about, going over, as well as all endless melodramas, positive and negative, good and bad, that have happened in the past. Constantly is our reference point for our life. And we dwell there a lot. As well as tons of people are always in the future, thinking about planning, what I need to do, what's going to happen, worrying about, having anxiety about, right? If you have anxiety or worry, it is only because you're thinking about something that's going to happen in the future. You never worry about the past. You can't worry about the past, it's already happened. You can be sad, you can be depressed, you can feel grief, you can feel all kinds of hurt, all kinds of about the past, but you can't worry about the past. So if you're a worrier, if you have anxiety, it's because you live in the future. Right? So aware that life is available only in the present moment is big. You got to stop and go, what's he saying here? Do I get it? Do I believe it? Because if you do, it's a life changer. Because if you believe that life is only occurring in the present, pay close attention now. This is the present. Is everybody clear? It's important. This is the present. Not when I said it a minute ago. That's the past. Is that clear? And if you're thinking, I'm going to say it again, that's the future. It hasn't... it hasn't happened. It's only something... All your future thinking, all of it, is fantasy. Now, this is going to be a shocker to people, right? Because people are always playing out their future as if it's real and creating all kinds of emotions, stress around it. Future thinking equals is fantasy. So if you spend a lot of time thinking about the future, even if you're not worrying, even if you're just thinking about it, anticipating, planning, you are in the world of fantasy. You're not in reality. This is reality. No other reality. This is reality. This is your reality. If you want to live in reality, you're in, this is it. There's no other reality but this. Is that clear? You know what I mean? I mean, we got to have a common language so we can speak to one another. So when you hear things about past, present, and future, living in the present, living in the now, right? You've heard all these words. There are lots of big books around them. This is it. It's not such a big deal, is it? The now. This is it. It's not what it was a minute ago when I said this was it. This is it. Now, once you get that this is it, this is the now, this is present, and this is the only place you're alive. Would everybody here alive? Good. Anybody dead? Nobody's dead. All right. Everybody's alive. If you are alive, you are alive now. Is that clear? This is the only place that you're alive. You may think you have a life somewhere else. Right? Oh, I have a life at home, and I have a life with these people, and I have a life at work, right? You know how we talk like that? But you're just thinking about that now, aren't you? The only thing you know, right? I mean, is anybody here sure that their house hasn't burned down? I mean, I don't want to scare anybody. But are you absolutely sure your house hasn't burned down? We don't know. We don't know anything. All we know is what? The only thing we can be sure about is what? Is that we are here now. Right? We may hope that our loved ones are safe, right? We may hope that our home and all our things are still there. We may hope that we still have a job on Monday, right? But the truth is, we don't know, right? We make plans, but we don't know if we're going to be around to live them, do we? Right? I had all kinds of plans last week. Then I hurt my back, and I couldn't do any of them. My plans were just fantasies of how my week was going to unfold. Right? So, this is big. Please reflect on this, meditate on this. You know, ask yourself the question, do I really believe, and is it become my experience, that life is only available now? If you buy that, okay, so you have to buy this first. First, you have to buy that there's only this. This is now. When your future becomes now, you may have the opportunity to experience it. But when you experience it, it'll only be in the now. Is that clear? And it will not be the way you fantasized it will be. Because it will be real then. Fantasy is not reality. Is that clear? I mean, I worked 40 years in mental health. That was a criteria there. You know, are people in reality or are they in fantasy? See, that was a clinical judgment. And yet, you know, everybody is walking around in fantasy and they don't get locked up. Okay? Now. This is now. This is where our life is. Then, I'm not even through the first sentence yet. I mean, this is how we have to read this stuff. So he says, aware that life is available only in the present moment and that it is possible to live happily in the here and now. Stop. Right? Can you see what big things he's giving us to chew on? Right? Number one, do we really believe that life only occurs in the present moment and that this is all there really is in reality? And two, do I believe that it is possible to live here in the present? Again, here now, right? This is time and space, right? Place and time, now, here and now. Do I really believe that it is possible to live happily here? It's a big one. You know, again, I'm not asking you to raise your hands, but I ask you to ask yourself that question. Do I really believe that it is possible to live happily. Now again, there may be people here who haven't had a lot of happiness in their life. But I am sure everyone here has had at least a moment of happiness. So you know what happiness is. Whatever that moment of happiness was, do you believe that you have the capacity of dwelling continually, happily, in the present? I mean, that's a big one. So I'm saying, don't just jump over it. Because whether you believe that or not will have a lot to do with how you live your life. If you don't believe it, and most people do not believe it, I don't care what they say, they don't buy it. Right? Most people think what? Well, if I could only suffer less. Be a little less tossed about by negative emotions and thoughts and mind states. I settle for that. Right? That is how low our expectations have become in this life. Right? Many people these days, they think life is hard, stressful, doggy. I mean, all kinds of things people think, you know, with little moments. If I can just make it to the weekend. Whew. Right. 5 weeks to vacation. Whew. You know what I mean? That's the way people live, right? I mean, I know people who are teachers. This is sad. From the first day of school are counting how many days to summer vacation. I mean, in the teacher's room, they have a calendar. They check them off. Aware that life is available only in the present moment and that it's possible to live happily in the here and now. I think this goes back to what we talked about a few minutes ago in Shantideva about confidence, trust. It's interesting. Buddhism is not faith-based in our traditional Judeo-Christian faith-based religions. There is no supreme deity. There is. It's not. It's just different. But there is, interestingly enough, an element of belief. But it is this type of belief. In the same way, it is really the message of the Buddha 2,600 years ago, and then all the realized masters since then, that tell us about this innate capacity that we all have for awakening, for freedom, for the cessation of suffering, for happiness and well-being. It is not, for most of us, our ongoing experience. It is something that another human being has discovered and realized and is sharing their insights with us. Is that clear? That's the power of it, right? So in the same way, many of us may have moments of happiness or some degree of happiness. Some of us may remember times in our life, maybe when we were younger. When being happy on an ongoing basis was more kind of what was going on. The idea that as adults, and we are all adults here, that as adults, living the lives we are living, that we have this capacity to be happy Each and every one of us has that capacity. For most of us is something that, because it is not our experience, we have to trust someone else. Now, that's interesting, because we know that in our society, in the whole psychological world, we know that people have what? Big time in our culture. Trust issues. Anybody ever hear that word? But here it is, you know. It's funny, in Buddhism there's actually teachings having to do with how to know, how to identify a trustworthy object. It's interesting, very, very fairly elaborated teachings that tells you how do you know that this is something, a path, a teacher that you can trust. And it kind of delineates that, so it's not like blind. But we are back to where we were in Shantideva a few minutes ago. There has to be some trust at some point. We have to trust something, because we don't know on our own how to do it. See, that's our dilemma, right? We don't know how to do it. Even if we've read all the books. And there are many people here. I mean, if we added up all the books that people in this hall have read on spiritual subjects, I mean, it would probably fill this room, right? And yet, why are we all here today? Right. Because we need a path and we need a guide. We need guides. And that's just the truth. Because we don't, not even though we've read it and we intellectually understand it, left to our own devices, we can't make it work. And that's just the truth. And so at some point, we have to trust. We have to have confidence in a path and in guides. It's simple, right? If I want to be a great musician, I have to find teachers. If I want to be a great mountain climber, I have to find teachers. Whatever I want to do, if I aspire to become accomplished in it, I have to find mentors, I have to find teachers, right? I mean, we all know that. It's no different here. For some reason, when people get into the realm, it's interesting, the realm where there is most opportunity for self-delusion, this is the place we go, I can do this myself. I can put this together myself. And this is the very self that only gives us poor advice. Right? This is the self that we've been listening to for years that is continually giving us poor advice, and now we go, but I will continue to listen to this self. In its own transformation, it doesn't want to change. It likes it the way it is. It's in control. We need another intervening force. Another intervening variable. Is that clear? Well, I don't think we'll even get through this sentence. Aware that life is available only in the present moment and that it is possible to live happily in the here and now, comma. We are committed to training ourselves to live deeply each moment of daily life. There it is. But you don't get here with any meaning if you haven't really gotten those first two. You see? It's when we really understand that life occurs in the present now, right? And that it is possible in the present moment to be happy, to be open, to be, you know, all the good qualities are available to us, right? Therefore, I am committed to learning how to live fully in the present. That's what we're training in. That's what we're learning. That's what we're practicing. That's what all the teachings are helping us do. How do we become a full human being and live fully in life? And again, this is not a spiritual life that you are called to lead. This is your human life, right? Life in the present moment means wherever you are, whoever you're with, whatever your lifestyle is, whatever kind of job you have, that's where we are to live fully, in the present moment. Not in the past, not in the future. Anyhow, we will continue, and we will finish this very profound paragraph. And this is only one of the trainings. So, thank you.